Ready to launch a new career or not sure what to do after graduation? Rumpke is hiring for CDL driving trainees. We pay you to get your CDL license while working for us. Driver trainees receive $18 an hour, great benefits, and Rumpke will pay your CDL costs. Once you're a CDL driver, you can earn $1,000 to $1,300 a week and more than $10,000 in bonuses possible in your first year. Apply today and launch a lucrative career at Rumpke. Apply now at RumpkeCareers.com. Equal opportunity employer. Restrictions apply.
From coast to coast, border to border, and around the world, you're going online with Bill Alexander. Laugh and learn while you listen to a brilliant display of radio. Online. Online. With Bill Alexander. Bill
Alexander. Hi, everyone. Yours truly, William Eric Alexander. All my friends call me Bill, and you're online with Bill Alexander here on WMCK.FM, the Keysport, 107.5 FM, WLDJ, Newcastle, HOFMradio.com, 1620 AM, Huntington Community Radio, Huntington, PA, Mixtape Radio International at mtri.co.uk, Steel FM at steelfm.org, WWSX Radio 99.1 FM, Rehoboth, Delaware, Radio Rehoboth.com, Orca Radio at orcaradio.coffeecup.com, Owensboro, Kentucky, and streaming live online at pghtalkradio.com. For some strange reason, I can go through that whole list forward and backwards, and the station in Owensboro, Kentucky just knocks me out of the loop. I don't know why. It just happens. Every week, if you noticed, I stop right there. But anyhow, enough of me babbling about my problems on this wonderful day. Now, in the past, we have talked to therapists, plastic surgeons. We have talked to general practitioners. But today, we're talking to our first dentist on the program. The name is Salih Bomber, and I hope I got that right. Please tell me I was at least close.
Yeah, very close.
Oh, okay. So you are, do me a favor, explain to my audience who you are.
Yeah, definitely. So like you said, I am a trained dental surgeon and a public health professional. And most of my work or the research that I do, it revolves around finding ways to improve health outcomes in patients, you know, for their overall health or quality of life, as well as, you know, outcomes related to specific disease conditions or specific treatment modalities. Yes, that is what I do.
So with you doing that, does everything that we feel internally, externally, does it all relate back to the teeth or oral health care in some way?
Yes, yes. I think it applies for the wellness of your body in its entirety, right?
Okay.
I haven't seen a patient who has a toothache or an oral ulcer was feeling happy that day. I have never seen a happy patient with pain.
Good point.
So definitely, it all comes down to that, right? Your overall well-being.
Yeah, I know what a bear I am, and when I have the problem I've had. In the last 3 months, I've had two root canals, and let me tell you, they were not fun. Whenever you try to self-medicate, bourbon works really well to try to ease that pain. If not, you don't care what you feel. So I'm looking at the information that I have on you. And the interesting thing about it, it talks about this whole idea of technology, the buy-in mm-hmm. during the pandemic. How does that relate to the dental field? Because I know telemedicine, the way it works with therapists and doctors, but how does it work with dentistry?
Yeah, that's a very good point. So I think, you know, what happened during the pandemic really is all of a sudden there was the emergency declaration, hospitals and clinics and everything had to, like, take a step back and a lot of times closed down.
Right.
So the same happened with dental clinics and hospitals for dental surgeries. So even the basic consultations are just having to talk to your doctor about, hey, this is the condition that I'm facing right now. Do you have any suggestions for me, or what can I do about my pain, or what do we do about the surgery that we had planned 2 days from now? These are the kind of things for which you may not have to be in the dental office or in the hospital at that given point, right? And you could very much use digital technology. You could very much use telehealth consultations for these, right? So, yeah, it's useful everywhere.
Now, with the field of dentistry and the pandemic, dentists, the hygienist, and everybody that works in that facility are more susceptible to COVID because mm-hmm. of it being the droplets that we inhale and exhale. Now, from mm-hmm. what I understand, dentists, for the most part, have taken extreme precautions even before this has happened because they understood how certain illnesses spread. Because, like mm-hmm. I said, I've been at the dentist twice dealing with root canals, and to me, it doesn't seem like anything's different. However, when I spoke to my dentist, he said, we've been doing it all along. They didn't have to do anything extra. Now, are you noticing that everywhere?
Yeah, specifically for dentists, I would say it has been, you know, like you said, we have been doing this all along because when we're working with the patient, we're working in very close proximity to their mouth, to their nose, right? So there's always this chance of getting infections or something like that. So we have been following this for a very long time. Now, of course, with COVID-19, we've had to put in some additional measures, you know. In the waiting area, you have to practice social distancing.
Right.
Adjusting the appointment schedules or timings that way. Also, taking a little extra care about your staff. So a couple of things have, of course, ramped up even more than they were before. But like you said, as compared to a lot of other medical specialties, dentists have been prepared for this all along.
Now, the other thing is, too, and I know a lot of appointments have been pushed back, like you said, because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. one thing I've noticed, and I'm just as bad as everybody else, is that we never see the dentist unless we're in pain, which is probably right. not the best way to do that. You probably should see him beforehand. Now, I do get cleanings done every 6 months mm-hmm. that my insurance allows, and that is about it. But when I suffer a toothache or anything else, the first thing that pops into my head is going to be, what is this going to cost me, and can I deal with the pain? And I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels that way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. The cost is always a major factor every time you have this dilemma of whether or not you should get a treatment done. It's much less of a decision-making factor when, you know, when push comes to shove and you're having this huge swelling or a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
But in normal cases, we're not as keen to go in for, you know, preventive checkups. So I think, you know, the insurance or the payer side has been a little more active in the past decade or so about this. Which has been very helpful in changing the patient's mindset. So, like you said, you can come in for oral prophylaxis, you can come in for preventive checkups, which are covered by most payers right now.
Okay.
That has been fairly helpful. But yeah, I think a little bit of change in our mindset as patients, as consumers, also needs to be done because, you know, and I can't stress this enough. If you can, you know, the earlier you can get to your doctor, the better it is for you. This applies for your entire body.
Right.
Not just your teeth, but everything. Yeah. Every time.
Because the last root canal I told my dentist, this is the last time I wait this long. If I start to feel pain, I'll be in here the next day. And he just looked at me and laughed because, again, we have our schedules are so busy that we don't have time to plan it, but yet we're willing to live in misery until we can get there. And again, it's just one of those situations. Now, another thing on your or the information I have is you talk about artificial intelligence. How does that work mm-hmm. in dentistry?
Yeah, so again, there's a lot of research going on, a lot of newer modalities coming into this. Artificial intelligence are going a step ahead. Even machine learning across the field of medicine has been helping in diagnostics, you know, in the diagnosis part or screening. For COVID-19, we've been using it so often now that, and it's a part of dental practice. I think it would remain in practice for a very long time from here on too, as well as, you know, surveillance measures for contact tracing and all. This may be a little more COVID-19 specific, but like I said, it is going to remain within dental or any other medical specialty practice for a very long time. And specifically talking about dentistry, you know, there's a lot of scope for using decision support tools in dentistry and any other medical specialty. Again, you know, AI supported tools can help you in triaging or clinical care or monitoring the patients. For example, an AI supported 3D imaging tool might help you better in diagnosing a tumor as compared to separating that as compared to a regular human anatomy, right? So AI decision support tools are very, very, I mean, I'm very excited to see more and more use of that within the practice.
Okay. Now, with the stuff that is being created in this, how long does it take it from the creation side to get in the actual dentist office?
Yeah, that's an amazing question. And I think COVID-19, again, as unfortunate as the whole situation has been, but it has really, really accelerated this whole process, you know. I mean, the pandemic caused this massive disruption in all our lives, and all of a sudden, everything that we believed in, everything that we've learned, changed. Previously, you know, on policy levels, on government levels, on patient levels, on hospital or doctor levels, every time we thought of adopting a new technology or a new service, it took us months even before we decide whether we want to do it or not.
Okay.
Now everything is happening in matter of weeks. And again, in, you know, like you asked, how long does it take from the inception of the idea to actually getting it into the office? Previously, it could take years for that to happen. But now I think a couple of months is more than enough, at least for, you know, simpler technologies or simpler devices to be used in the office, even if it's on, you know, on temporary basis, or even if you're just testing at that point. We're seeing with the vaccines, right?
Right.
Normally, it would take years for the vaccines to come up. With COVID-19, it's just there in a year. So I think the whole life cycle has really, really gone down in terms of how long it takes. Yeah.
Now, do you see that eventually dentistry will be a hands-off procedure? Like, I know they're doing open heart surgery now and everything through robotics. Do you see the same thing happen in dentistry?
I wouldn't say it would become an entirely hands-off field, because I and maybe this is more of my personal view, but I think the role of a specialist in any medical specialty will remain very important, really crucial, irrespective of the technology. And of course, we want technology to be a huge part of what we do, what we provide to the patients. But the whole point of trying to take our practice or the way we conduct healthcare a step ahead is to better the services or the outcomes for our patients.
Okay.
And I think to keep it at the highest level possible, you will have to have that human component, right? People go through, the specialists, they go through training, and there's an understanding of, what is better, what is not. Of course, with AI and machine learning, the devices and the tools that we have at our disposal now are definitely very, very helpful. But I would still think the human component remains a major, major part of this. Not to mention, I think every time a doctor treats a patient for anything, the human-to-human conversations or that relationship is also a very important part of treating them, right?
So another question I have, which is really off the subject here, but dealing with dentistry, what type of person is it that becomes a dentist? Because we always see these things that they like inflicting pain on people. The best way to look at it is Little Shop of Horrors. I mean, we see that, and again, but I know that can't be true.
Well, on the contrary, I think most dentists are the people who want to see their patients free of pain.
Okay.
You know, and I can't stress this enough, how much of a toll it takes on a dental surgeon, you know, going through these procedures when you're putting all your focus and effort on treating a certain condition, and also at the same time you're worried, you're taking care of the patient that he or she doesn't feel that pain, you know, they're having the best experience possible. And a dental surgeon probably does this like number of times a day, right? So I personally think people who go into this field are the ones who want to see the patients free of pain, who wants to see the patient in the optimum health possible.
Because I always wondered that. Now, with going into the field, what is one of the major problems that you see that is the most common problem that you see in the United States with dentistry that the patient has?
Yeah, I think this goes back to one of your previous questions. I think the overall mindset of the patients in getting preventive checkups done or going to your doctor before things really get bad for you. I can't tell you how many patients we see who are, you know, who come to you with a lot of swelling or a lot of pain, and you know, every time the patient comes in, they would say to us, "I wish I came a little earlier. I wish I did not, you know, ignore this." But like you said about your own experience, you know, we as patients go out of the clinics and then forget about this, and the next time we start having any issues, it's again the same thing, right? We do not go to the doctor unless it really, really gets bad. So now, I think that's one thing that really needs a little bit of work. As dentists from our side, maybe we need to increase a little more awareness as a government or policy. I think we need to have better and flexible policies for the patients to go and seek help at an earlier time. And as payers, of course, you know, again, try to reimburse the patient for doing what is the right thing. Right.
Now, when we start with dental health, we start it with children and the brushing technique. And I know the right way to do it. And I mean, I've been told I've been very aggressive doing mine. But how do you teach a child that dental health is important? Because I know with my three kids, getting them started doing it is like, and I hate to use the pun, but I will, like pulling teeth. Because they don't want to do it. They don't understand the importance of it. How do you make a child understand it's important to start good dental hygiene?
Yeah, definitely. So I like using the example of teaching our kids to play tennis. So if you take a six-year-old for tennis lessons, the first day, the kid is absolutely not going to want to be there.
Right.
Right. But you're still going to take them there the next day. The next day, maybe they can just stay there for a while, but they want to go back again. You still keep doing that. You keep pushing a little bit every day for them to start liking it, for them to start learning it. And eventually, more often than not, they will develop some interest in it. I think teaching the kids better of oral hygiene or any good practices, it's exactly the same. It's a game of patience. You really have to be at it all the time. You cannot expect them to love it the very first time you teach them, but kind of gradually getting them to do it. Mm-hmm. The other thing being, I think, you know, kids really, really look at the family members or their parents, and, you know, as the elders in the family, if we can show them that we are doing this all the time, or we believe what we are preaching, then that also helps, you know, in them getting to do these things.
The other thing that we're noticing too in the United States, and I don't think a lot of people realize this, but diet has a lot to mm-hmm. do with dental care.
Exactly, exactly. I couldn't agree more with you. Maybe this is all across the world, but in the United States, we are very much in love with sugars or high carb food, or, you know, a lot of fried food. Most of the junk food that we eat is very, very bad for your oral health or overall your entire body.
Right.
So, yeah, I think diet, we really need to take care of what we are eating. Not just for your oral health. It's something that's going to affect your entire body. So it is again an initiative that has to be built right within the family, right from the point where, you know, you're a kid. So if all you're seeing people around you eat is fried food and burgers and, you know, sweet confectionery food, then that is what you're going to love to eat. I think building a good diet habits right from the childhood is really important.
What frustrates me is that when I'm out in public and I see kids under the age of 4 that have mm-hmm. sugary soft drinks and they're drinking it, and you look closely at the teeth, you start noticing some decay or discoloration. And when you mention it to the parents, oh, don't worry, their baby teeth, they're going to fall out. But the thing is, you started a habit that's going to be very hard to break over a period of time. And I don't think the average person understands that.
Yeah, that's a very good point, you know. There's a lot of research showing how our soda portions are much bigger as compared to a lot of other countries, you know, and we're so in love with them. We're promoting sodas and, you know, sweet drinks all over the place without considering the impact it has on the younger generation, you know. That's been spoken a lot about. And to your point about, you know, hey, what happens? These are just baby teeth, so how does it matter? It actually does matter. Having you know, bad teeth at any given point, even if they're going to fall out and the newer ones are going to come, it is going to affect the newer ones that come. It is going to affect them.
Now,
I
know in certain parts of the country, and I know in the late 60s, this was an issue of fluoridation. Mm-hmm. And the one area that I mm-hmm. live in, they fought against fluoridation. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing fluoridation being put back into the water again to help prevent tooth decay, or is it being removed again?
I think this is more an area specific thing. There are some areas or some locations where the fluoride content in the water is really, really high, and it does cause some harm to teeth. It does cause some anomalies. So I obviously that is you know, not the right thing to do. I would say for kids, you know, right from the beginning, there are fluoride treatments in the clinics if needed. So I wouldn't really suggest to have this one-size-fits-all
okay.
strategy and going ahead and fluoridating water. all over the place.
So do you feel that with the toothpaste that we use, we're getting enough fluoridation on a daily basis?
Yeah, we do. And again, you know, on person-to-person basis, if there is more need of it, you could definitely have dental products or products for that. But not so much going on a mass strategy of fluoridating water.
So this is going to be an odd question, especially one to end with today. But we're noticing dental products being advertised on TV. We've seen mm-hmm. every toothpaste in the world done in one way, shape, or form, that one's better mm-hmm. than the other, one brightens the teeth better than the other, so on and so forth. My question is, these toothpastes with charcoal in them, do they really have charcoal mm-hmm. in them? And what are the benefits and the negatives of using charcoal toothpaste? Because to me, that just seems odd.
So yeah, I agree with you. There are a number of products out there available, and I may differ in my views about this with my colleagues, but I personally think as long as you follow good oral hygiene, any good product, any good toothpaste that you use should be great. That should be fine.
Okay.
That being said, for certain conditions, for certain patients, depending on your individual situation, there might be, you know, some others that are better as compared to another product. So if you're having sensitive teeth, toothpaste that are better for sensitive teeth would be better for you as compared to another one, which may be cheaper or it's more advertised or if the taste is more funkier. So, depending on your individual situations, there might be some toothpaste that are better for you. But for most people, like if I have to super simplify it and generalize it, then as long as you're following good oral hygiene practices, as long as you're brushing twice, as long as you're using a good toothbrush, I think any good brand of toothpaste is great to use.
Now, the argument in my household, and it's been one since my wife and I have been married almost 25 years now. Mm-hmm. What type of toothbrush? Is it firm? Is it soft? Is it mm-hmm. in between? What is the best toothbrush to use? Because my argument is, if it wasn't good to use, they wouldn't be making it.
Yes, that is a very good question. So, depending on your specific situation, there might be specific types of toothbrushes that are better fit for you.
Okay.
But generalizing it, I would say a medium soft or a medium hard. So basically a medium type of toothbrush, which does not have bristles that are super hard or super soft. Because you need some amount of tenacity, some hardness, in the bristles so as to clean the harder to clean areas of your teeth or, be able to be effective. But you also want them to be soft enough to not harm your gums or your oral tissues, right? So a medium soft, a medium hard toothbrush is always better. But for people who have super sensitive teeth, softer toothbrushes or toothbrushes that are made for sensitive teeth are much better preference. Yeah.
Well, Shali, I appreciate you joining me this afternoon because our time is up and I really appreciate it. It gave me some insights, and if you ever want to come back on the program again, please let me know and I'll be more than welcome to have you back again.
Yeah, definitely. It was great talking to you.
Thank you very much and you have a great afternoon.
You too.
Thank you once again to Shali Bombre for joining me today as we talked about oral health and dental health here online with Bill Alexander. And that was great because usually you don't talk about these things. And the only time you do talk about them is when you're in pain. And usually that's complaining. But anyhow, that's going to wrap it up for yours truly, Bill Alexander. You guys have a great rest of your day and we'll talk to you next time here online with yours truly, Bill Alexander.
This has been a $1 Million Baby production. For more information, go to italknet.com.
Rumpke is hiring CDL drivers age 19 and up, and drivers are paid based on experience. Rumpke CDL drivers earn $1,000 to $1,300 per week and more than $10,000 in bonuses possible in their first year. Rumpke drivers are home daily, work in a recession-resistant industry, receive great benefits and performance incentives. Start a lucrative career and apply now at RumpkeCareers.com. Equal opportunity employer. Restrictions apply.
How did we become Central Ohio's most trusted team of orthopedic experts? We focus on what matters most, our patients. At Orthopedic One, we know we're only at our best when we're helping you get better. And every day, your commitment to overcoming pain and injury inspires and moves us. That's why we bring our best every day to earn your trust. Find a physician near you at orthopedicone.com.